In part two of our look back at the assassination of President John F. Kennedy 50 years ago this week, WUWF's Dave Dunwoody sat down with University of West Florida historian Patrick Moore on how the shooting affected the Cold War.
Dr. Moore, let's go back to November 21st, 1963, the day before the shooting.
Well, the Cold War picture sort of is tied in with domestic issues. You look after rolling back a bit, certainly you have the Bay of Pigs situation, which really crippled Kennedy's capabilities. Khrushchev responded in kind by saying he was relatively weak. And it was difficult for Kennedy himself to sort of reassert himself as the leader on a global scale. And it becomes a very tense place. We create a number of programs, National Emergency Alarm Repeater, send out pamphlets to every American home, essentially telling them, be ready for war. This is not what Khrushchev is excited about, and he takes a step back after saying, essentially, we're going to push our will dealing with Berlin, and this is when the wall goes up.
The line of demarcation in the Cold War lies in Berlin. West Berlin, with its burgeoning prosperity, is a thorn in the side of the Reds. Refugees from the East escaped by the tens of thousands until the communists, in desperation, threw up their wall of hate to seal off the border.
Well, after this point, you see sort of the next round, of course, taking place there with the Cuban Missile Crisis.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union.
This is really where Kennedy, in many ways, stands eye to eye with the Soviets. As the Undersecretary of State, I believe, says, you know, the other guy just blinked. And fortunately, we managed to come away with that. Domestically, however, we have a tendency to look at President Kennedy as being this sort of untouchable hero of American political past. He was not that popular at the time. And actually, why he was visiting Dallas was because he was shoring up support within his own party in Johnson State. That was a telling statement, and everybody was aware of that at the time, that you don't have a terribly strong president. The Cold War situation is very tense. Domestically, it's very tense. And there was concern that there was going to be an instant power vacuum.
November 22nd, Kennedy is assassinated in Dallas. The quote-unquote free world pretty much went on alert, didn't it?
Absolutely.
West Germany has ordered alert condition number one for all its armed forces, fearing an aggressive Russian move in the wake of President Kennedy's assassination. Sources here confirm that West Germany's 400,000-man army has been ordered on combat alert, the highest condition short of actual war, following receipt of the news of the president's death.
The level that you have concern that the Soviets might do something remains to be seen, but I think that every nation had to be on alert. There were a number of issues. Who did this? Why did they do this? There were concerns about this, because suddenly now you have a president who has stood up to the Soviet Union, and with his passing, who's in charge around here?
They were expecting a move by the Soviets.
If you consider the context once again, what had happened in Berlin, the building of the wall, it once again showed that the Soviet Union and their allies in East Germany were really to demonstrate their resolve. And without somebody there in control, this seemed like an ideal time, if you're a world leader, to exercise might potentially.
What type of alert did U.S. forces go on?
The level of alert that the U.S. forces went on really remained in the hands of the president. And there's a really key event that takes place immediately after the assassination. There's this incredibly important and really very staged picture of the Vice President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, on board Air Force One, Jackie Kennedy standing next to him looking very distraught, with him being sworn in as President of the United States.
We have gotten a picture of President Johnson being sworn in by that woman federal judge, which I think we can pick up on this camera, that was done in the executive cabinet of the presidential plane. Always the swearing in of a new president has to be done within the shortest practical time after the death of the old.
And that was a message not just of a way of preserving history as we would typical inauguration, but the fact that we have a peaceful transfer of power.
I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's.
So the United States going on alert, obviously they needed to, because we shared those same concerns that all of our allies had in NATO and overseas. But at the same time, a demonstration that says the commander-in-chief may be dead, but the new commander-in-chief has instantly taken his place.
Europe, as we might expect, has been deeply stunned, shocked, and no doubt amazed by what happened in Dallas today. In the Vatican, Pope Paul VI was immediately informed. In Great Britain, radio and television suspended their regular programming after the flash of the president's death was received there.
On the other side of the Iron Curtain, as it turned out, there was no aggressive move made by the Soviet Union.
No, and once again, history tells us a different story, that perhaps if there had been an association between the assassination and the Soviets had somehow been involved with it, that might have come into place. But that is a telling statement later that there wasn't any collusion going on between the two different sides.
The Soviet news agency TASS carried a flash on its circuit this afternoon saying, and I quote from TASS, "It has been officially announced that the United States President John F. Kennedy has died in hospital after an attempt was made on his life," again, and still quoting TASS, "by persons as believed from among the extreme right-wing elements," close quote on TASS.
And it was more shock, I think, globally felt, rather than saying, this is our chance to attack. That wasn't on the Soviets' agenda, at least at that point.
Did we learn any lessons during that era that can be applied to today's foreign policy?
There are a lot of lessons we learned. You think about our role then. That was such a tenuous time in the early 1960s where we were really feeling our way. We didn't have a clear trajectory that said that we were going to end up victorious, communism was going to fail. Those were never elements. If anything, we were in the midst of a race of serious equation. How do we not allow places like Southeast Asia and Vietnam to fall? Why it escalated so heavily? The space race, we've got to make it to the moon before the Soviet Union. The learning curve about what happened certainly changed, and I think legacy wise, there's a lot of suggestion that probably if Kennedy had not been assassinated, that we might not have even gone to the moon. His passing sort of threw down the gauntlet that said we were going to accomplish many of the things that he had with his New Frontier program, going to the moon, etc. And without it, he might not have even been reelected in 1964, and the world would have been a very different place.
Dr. Patrick Moore is an historian at the University of West Florida and an expert on the Cold War. Coming up on Friday, the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination, how television news came of age in its coverage. Dave Dunwoody, WUWF News.